And you can see by the third, the last portion of the pregnancy here, placental concentrations of zinc go up. Placental fluid concentrations go up. And in the fetus, it goes through the roof. And so there is some mechanism to this. The mother of this animal is pushing zinc to the fetus. Well, I got to be fairly interested in this and wanted to figure out kind of how this occurred. And so what we did is I took, wanted to figure out the difference between pregnant and non-pregnant animals relative to absorption of trace elements. And we focused on copper and zinc, but we have many more. And so we, this was an interesting experiment. I went through a lot of graduate students on this. We had to halter break mature cows. And that was interesting, because we had to put them in metabolism phase. Mature pregnant cows, which was really fun. And so I had pregnant animals and the non-pregnant animals, same breed, same, relatively the same age, about 6 or 7 years old. And so I limited their intake, and I was just feeding alfalfa hay, standard alfalfa hay. And you look at the parent absorption in pregnant animals is higher, and the parent retention is higher. So they're absorbing more and retaining more copper in the body. Same with zinc. Apparent absorption of zinc went up, and I held the zinc concentrations the same relative to intake. Apparent absorption went up, and you see a tendency for apparent retention to be higher. So somehow there's some regulation relative to how they actually absorb trace minerals relative to their pregnancy test. And I can tell you these animals were way pregnant. We pulled them out of the metabolism phase, and about 14 days later they calved. Okay, so they were way at the end of their gestational period. Other things to consider, criterion for adequacy, is the response variable a variable, a good indicator of mineral status? It all depends on what you're measuring. This is the frustrating thing about it. And I'll just talk about calcium. Calcium for maximum bone strength is 2 to 3 times that for just normal growth. So if you're measuring average daily gain, you get one calcium level. But if you're measuring bone strength and growth, you get another level. Young lambs, zinc requirement for spermatogenesis is twice that for normal growth. So it all depends on what you're measuring. Plasma trace mineral concentrations, be careful on those. You'll typically see a reduction in plasma trace element concentrations when the animal is fairly deficient. It's hard to tell if they're normal if the animal has enough stores stored up. And liver copper concentrations, as I mentioned before, date of parturition. If you're going to look at those, make sure you know how far along these animals are relative to gestational status. Last thing I want to mention here is stress. And this is they induced stress in this experiment. They actually inoculated them with IBR and got them pretty sick. And they see an increase in copper and zinc excretion in the urine. Although the primary mode of excretion for zinc is not the urine, but they do see an increase in zinc due to the stressor over here. So stress can have a huge impact on mineral metabolism in an animal. So what have we learned so far? I think it's important that meeting nutritional requirements is crucial for optimizing productivity. Notice I said optimizing, not maximizing. Antagonisms, watch out for those, iron, molybdenum, sulfur, those types of things. Breed differences in mineral metabolism, be aware of those. There's also been evidence that there's big differences in vitamin metabolism, which is a whole other can of worms to open up. Immune effects, they are variable, and I think that potentially the variation in this data here could very well come from differences in mineral metabolism between breeds relative to differences in immune response to breeds. And also stress and as well as gestational status can have an impact on mineral metabolism and retention. So these are some of the things that I want to kind of just lay the groundwork for certain things to kind of lead into what Dr. Patterson is going to talk about here. So I'm going to go ahead and transition to Dr. Patterson, and we'll answer questions here towards the end. Am I on?
You're on.
Am I ready?
Oh, geez, I know you only got me on about a 10-foot halter here, so let's see if I can do this standing kind of here to the front without moving around. I don't think I mentioned to you that Terry played football for Colorado State University. You were a running back, is that right? Defensive end? Oh, you were a center for Texas A&M. I've been graduating from the Atkins football team here at Bozeman, too, and it's been working really well for me here the last year or so. All right, practical side of this. What does it mean? Let's see how we do this. Number one, intake didn't meet the animal's requirements. Didn't need enough bath, didn't need enough mineral supplement. Second, what it did eat was deficient. Just couldn't eat enough because the forages are deficient in copper, zinc, calcium, phosphorus, not meeting the animal's requirement. Number three, what Terry talked about. I'm eating how I can eat. It looks good on paper, but there's an antagonist. Too much molybdenum out there. Or I'm looking at the water and I got too much sulfate out there causing me a problem. But I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, very seldom, from what I can read, I'm paid to be a gossip and I review data, very seldom have I seen a situation where cattle survive on white salt and snowballs like they do in Montana. Okay? You have got to provide some mineral to those cattle throughout the year. Alright, why are they important? Let's just put it out here for you today and look at what Terry's trying to say to you. Well, we know that we've got to have minerals if we're going to have fertile cattle. Phosphorus, copper, zinc, manganese, selenium. We've got to have them to make that animal have an appetite. Necessary for the nervous system. Huge one. That's what Terry ended up talking about. Fetal development. That cow is moving copper and zinc into the fetus. And if that calf is born deficient, I always wonder, is that part of the reason that we have increased sickness on these calves? Disease resistance, hair coat, skin and claw health. Man, huge issue on foot rot with zinc. Milk production, muscle development, and as Terry said, bone development, calcium and phosphorus. Big ones. Well, let's talk about this. Well, I think I might have a problem. How do you go about seeing if, in fact, that's true? If your hunch is correct, that you might have a trace mineral. This is a calf from Texas, by the way, suffering from what deficiency? You bet. Copper deficiency, Bangus, turned red. Gordy Carson's the one that talks about it. After about, I think, 6 weeks, he puts it on good mineral supplement. The hair turns black again. Lee McDowell from Florida, interesting guy. I mean, one of the fathers of modern trace mineral in my mind, great book to read, says that copper deficiency has been identified as the most common trace mineral deficiency of cattle in the world, with probably phosphorus from a macro being number one. And this is probably why so many nutritionists talk about copper metabolism, because it is a deficiency in the United States. In one of our more recent NAMS, National Animal Health Monitoring System, they made an interesting comment here, and it says that copper deficiency is not restricted to a single geographic region of the United States. It's not restricted to the West. Copper can persist despite reported use of supplements by producers. So you may have a deficiency, you think you're solving it with a supplement, and the cattle are still in a copper deficiency. And it's all over the United States. So let's begin to talk about it. Okay? So if I'm out there and things just don't feel right, and the rancher knows by looking at those cattle, things just don't feel right, they don't look right. Let's talk about copper first. And this should be in the text, by the way. And let's take the cow side, and then we'll take the bull side. Delayed estrus, copper deficiency. Embryonic death, copper deficiency. Decreased conception. Terry showed you that puberty, days to puberty, was extended. It was, I think, almost 2 months longer in Terry's data. And then decreased ovulation. And we continue to wonder and continue to see reports that my immunity is enhanced if I supplement copper, and it declines if they're in a deficiency. On the bull side, decreased libido, decreased spermatogenesis. Let's look down here at zinc on the right, on the bottom, and those two go together. Increased amount of dystocia. Boy, that's interesting. Increased dystocia. I always thought that was from feeding too much energy or too much protein. The other one, abnormal estrus, and we also wonder about immunity effects. On the bull side, Gardeners in South Dakota, I think Larry Coy did a really neat study with their Angus bulls looking at zinc, impaired growth, delayed puberty, decreased testicular size. I remember that study. Without any zinc in the diet, the testicles weren't very big. You put in that, I think in that case, maybe 90 parts men, a high dose, size of the testicles came back to normal size, and then decreased libido. Look how many of the similar symptoms you have for both copper and zinc. Let's ask this question. How long have we known about this? We've known about it since at least the 1930s. Florida had a condition that ranchers kept describing. It's called a roasting disease. And they weren't real sure what it was, and I'm not sure what part of Florida this was at, but they identified a deficiency, weren't real sure what it was, but they said, well, cobalt, iron, and especially copper appeared to be causing this wasting disease in these cattle in the 1930s in Florida. What about zinc? And I love to read Lee's book. In the 1960s, and even before that, the ancient pharaohs in Egypt knew that if they put zinc on the skin, it would cure skin conditions. One of the things I love to do in the mornings is I'm in the bathroom, I'm showering, and I turn that dander shampoo bottle over. What are the ingredients in something like, say, what's the one that, you know, puts that stuff on your... Selsun Blue is one, that's the other one, the big... Head and Shoulders, yeah, Head and Shoulders. Look at that one. It always has some zinc in it, too. And I'm always wondering, is that what cures my dandruff? So they saw that they could cure skin disorder in the 60s. Some of the symptoms, once again, inflammation of the nose and mouth, unthrifty, rough hair, stiffness of the joints, swelling of the feet, and fetlocks, cracks in the skin. That tells me that if you don't have some zinc in the diet, just saying foot rot's on its way. And then last one, in grazing animals, a deficiency has resulted in, they just didn't grow very well, fertility wasn't good, low serum zinc, and decreased resistance to infection and stress. Once again, what Terry talked about on that immunity side. But I want to take a couple other ones now. Let's talk about some manganese, because manganese is in your mineral supplements. Look at this one. Similar copper and zinc. Reproductive performance. Skeletal deformity. Shortened tendons in the newborn. Reduced birth weight. Iodine. Huge one. We put iodine in for foot rot. EDDI, the organic form. Weak calves. Hairless calves. Impaired fertility. Retained placentas. Ooh, that's interesting. Because there's another one that would be similar to that. Foot rot and lump jaw. And boy, I like that EDDI mixed with zinc to work on iodine. But be careful if you use too much organic. And that's controlled by the feds. We're not supposed to use real high levels of organic iodine. And this is the one I wanted to get to. Selenium. Western part of Montana, selenium deficient. Eastern part of the state, hardened. Actually high levels of selenium. White muscle disease is probably most known as a deficiency. Reduced disease. Okay. Retained placenta. Well, that's kind of like iodine or manganese. Weak or dead calves. Chronic diarrhea. And here's an interesting one, because much of the West has had 8 years of drought, doesn't appear to be stopping. High dietary or water sulfate seems to interfere with selenium. So if you've got a water sample that's real high in sulfate, maybe 2,000 parts per minute, I'll tell you something in a minute, it might interfere with selenium absorption. We always talk about copper and sulfate. That's what Terry tried to show you a minute ago. But what about selenium and sulfate? Okay? Well, I like this one, though. Marco Polo knew as early as 1300 that there was something wrong with these horses when their hooves fell off. Okay, not a good symptom when you're trying to go to China. And they kind of identified, they thought maybe these horses were eating some poisonous plants. But the one I love, coming out of Montana, is this one. Some have speculated that many of the horses from the U.S. Cavalry commanded by General George Armstrong Custer exhibited saline toxicity during the summer of 1876, and those horses began to lose hair, and their feet were awfully sore when he got to the Little Bighorn River. I bet you didn't know this, did you? You thought it was just 8,000 really pissed off Sioux that were upset with him. You didn't know that if we'd had Altec there, that you guys could have saved these guys. The Battle of the Little Bighorn. Alright. But before Ken and I try to convince you that all production problems are due to minerals, I want you to step back. And I want you to think about a couple of other things. I want you to think about the biggies first. And the first one is, when we're working with ranchers, we usually ask a couple questions before we get to minerals. I won't talk to you about minerals until you convince me that, number one, you've got adequate protein in the diet. Today, are these spring calving cows on 10% protein? Are they above 7% protein? And what is the protein supplement if they're not? Second one is, and this is huge, is there enough energy in the diet? Are these cows just getting enough calories per day? Okay? And then if they convince us that, yeah, they've got enough protein, got enough energy, 10 pounds of alfalfa, good grass hay, maybe some corn, we begin to ask for some symptomology. Tell me what you're seeing in the cow herd. Are you seeing increase in respiratory sickness, some pneumonias, which could be an immune system problem? Are you seeing a decrease in reproduction? Normally you've got about 95% of cows bred, now you're down to 90. That's a lowered conception. Are you seeing things like increase in foot rot? Boy, that's a dead giveaway. Change in hair color, you bet. Red hair on a black Angus. And then this issue here, the cows just didn't clean after calving, or they didn't pass the placenta, retained placenta. And that could be a whole host of trace minerals. If you answered yes to those questions on the bottom, then there may be a mineral problem. We really want to talk to you about that. Well, there's some steps to follow if you suspect a trace mineral problem. I love this slide. This slide comes to American Fork Ranch, Melville, Montana. What do you think the name of this slide is? Can anybody guess what the name of this slide is? Getting my orders for the day. Okay, is the name of this slide. Getting my orders for the day. I love the husband-wife management there. If you suspect a problem, real simple. Terry tried to show it to you. Forage analysis. One that we oftentimes overlook, water analysis. And then this last one, a little expensive, and I don't recommend it. In fact, I rarely recommend it, is a liver biopsy. Okay? What you don't see up there may be blood analysis, Terry. And so for copper, we're going to talk about that. But maybe zinc is okay, selenium's okay, but I oftentimes don't use that. But Dale Gordon-Lewson's there, and he can answer that better than I can. So let's talk about forage analysis. Let's look at three surveys from Montana, from Texas, and from Arkansas. If you look at copper and say the requirement is 10. 10 parts per million is where we got to be. Zinc, 30 parts per million is where we got to be. Look at Montana. Every one of the grass hay, grass legume, or legume hay, there's about, I think, about 500 forages in there. Every one of them is deficient in those two trace minerals. Let's move down to Texas on native range. 10 is what's required for copper. There were 5. 30 is required for zinc. There are 21. So it looks in this data set they're deficient. Get over to Arkansas, east of here. Copper just barely made it. They're in good shape, 10, but zinc tends to be a little low. So as we started out and said, there could be deficiencies around the country. Larry Cora, in that 97 study, looked at 70 samples from forages from around the country. 30% of the forages that he looked at were adequate in copper, but 70% were marginal, kind of like that Arkansas. They're just right on the line. Zinc was adequate in 34%, but it was deficient or marginal in about 65%. So we got a problem nationally. And then selenium was deficient in about 50% of the samples analyzed. Here's Montana. Once again, copper is 10. The requirement's 10. The values are 5, so about half. Zinc is about half of where it should be. And then we begin to worry about this molybdenum. Terry talked about it. The ideal ratio is 5:1, copper to molybdenum. Copper to molybdenum, 5:1. And we're about 2.6, so we've got a problem in that state. And Terry said something that really hit me as to why we have a problem in the state. The second thing to look at, well, I'll tell you why we have a problem in the state, and all the way down through that is because eastern Montana is the bottom of the lake bed. Terry, you talk about that. You talk about soil pH. As the soil pH goes up, copper availability, zinc availability goes down. As soil pH goes up, molybdenum goes up. That, it's going the wrong way. So that's part of the reason, even though the fridge analysis says we're in good shape, the soil pH is getting higher and higher and the bioavailability is going down. We got a water sample from a ranch that we worked with, nitrate, 0 to 44 is desired. This sample has 0, so it's safe water, good water. Calcium, water is 100, 253. We think this high level of calcium in this water could interfere with the absorption. Manganese is high, may cause diarrhea. Magnesium may cause diarrhea, and sulfate, we start to look at it once it goes above 500 parts per million, and Terry may say 1,000, but this is at 4,000 parts per million sulfate, okay? This can cause a decrease in copper absorption, and it could cause polyencephalomalacia, brainers, on cattle, okay? This is why when I hunt in Jordan, Montana, they will not let me drink the water out there because it will give me diarrhea because it is high in magnesium sulfate. Okay? We've done surveys of ranches out there just to say, well, how big a problem is it? And this is northeast part of the state, and it looks to me like about 4, maybe 5 of those ranches up there have high enough sulfate, I think caused by the drought, that they need to be worried about their mineral program. And so, kind of conclusion of the water, if you're between 1,500 and 3,000, there's a lot of water samples in the country that have that kind of sulfate. It's considered marginal water, may be considered poor for confined cattle during hot weather, sporadic cases of polio. And I want to come back and talk about this polio with this work right here. This guy is a neat scientist in western South Dakota. His name is Trey Patterson, no relation. But look at this. He's got sulfate levels going from 400 to 4,600 parts per million. Okay, 400 to 46. So he's got four levels of sulfate there. Look what happened to gain. On 400 levels, which is under that 500, under that kind of target level, 1.879 pounds a day. But as he increased sulfate in the water, gains went linearly down. Water intake went linearly down. And so when you see this in under hot weather, you could have a problem. So as sulfate increased in the water, daily gains declined in Trey's work. But here's what I really wanted to get at. It's a good thing Trey was 400 miles away from where his boss lives, is that he got to do this kind of a study. He compared rural water, well water, and dam water with increasing levels of sulfate. Okay? Look at morbidity, sickness, zero on well. 25% of calves got sick on well water and 15% got sick on dam water. If you look at death rate, 5% of cattle died from polio. So it's a thiamine deficiency. Terry understands the biochemistry a lot better than I do. We needed this work. We needed Trey to do this work to give us some ideas of how bad could the situation be. Here's a recent USDA study I just came across. 2,000 cows from 200 herds from 18 states were evaluated, kind of in summary. Serum copper status was evaluated. 34 of the 2,000 head were deficient, but 700 head, almost 40% of the cattle, were marginally deficient in copper. All right. I said that, and Dale Gordon-Lucian can talk about this, I've never been convinced that serum copper is the right way to do this. And there's maybe some exceptions. But what we've done is come in and we've used a true chest biopsy needle, pipette biopsy needle, and gone into the liver and pulled out about 3 or 4 liver samples and sent them to Michigan State to have them analyzed. And I got a lot of friends from around the country. Send me your liver biopsy data, okay? And it shows you in that second column the number of cattle that came from every state. And then all I did was I used 30 parts per million. Anything under 30 parts per million was considered pretty deficient, according to Dr. Pulls out of Canada. And anything over 90 parts per million was considered pretty adequate, okay? The only thing that really popped up at me was Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota tended to have a lot of deficient cows out there. That these are the states, and this data is getting to be about 4 years old, 5 years old, that they have more deficient cattle that we sampled compared to calves from other states. In Montana, even though it's 0.2, guys, I think it's higher than that because all of our samples came from the western part of the state, not from the eastern part, the old lake bed. You look at percent adequate, North Dakota, 0% of those cows we sampled were adequate in liver coppers. I like what Perry said about the change in liver coppers and how that pregnant cow affected. This is some work that Connie Swenson did for her PhD work at Montana State Prison in Deer Lodge. Tremendous facility. About 1,500 cows, as I recall. Connie went up and said, could I have cows to sample them throughout the year? And she said, you bet. They said, you bet. Pre-weaning to pre-weaning. For a whole year, you can do liver biopsies to see how things. Working at the prison is outstanding. The labor is always there every morning, and they're there from 2 to 4 years. Okay? What they looked at was, look how liver copper in the cow goes down prior to calving. Exactly what Terry said. And then look at how it increased with copper sulfate in breeding versus the controlled cow. And these cattle have lots of copper in their liver. They're not deficient by any means, but there is difference in supplemented versus non-supplemented cattle. I want to repeat what Terry said about prevention of sickness. Can we use these trace minerals to try to overcome BRD, bovine respiratory disease, that complex of respiratory pneumonias? And the guy I trust, two guys that I trust in this country as much as anybody, is Mike Gallion from Texas Tech and Louis Perino, who's now in medical school in Glendale from Arizona. These guys wrote a review, and I like it, and I follow what they say, is that supplemental copper, zinc, selenium, and chromium even, it can alter the immune function of newly received calves, on these weaned calves. And some field trials have shown decreases in bovine respiratory disease, respiratory, with supplementation. Okay, so we've got field trials out there that are saying, boy, if you put a good mineral supplement, we're going to reduce sickness. He said, however, certain experiments have not shown any improvement. And so you're wondering on that, is the reason they didn't get any improvement? The calves weren't under enough stress. You've got to be stressed calves. And so here's the stress that I think these weaned calves are looking at. They have come out of drought country, poor nutrition. You've taken them away from mom and put them on a semi for an overnight haul. You switch them between groups. You put them in different pens. You commingle them with cattle. They're susceptible to disease, temperature, especially in early fall, and then the antagonist. All of these, we think, can put stress on cattle and precipitate BRD. I want to share with you some data from Montana. Here's on about 10,000 calves. We're going to talk health and nutrition. Health and nutrition. No pre-vaccination, no pre-weaning shots versus pre-weaning shots, and then they go to the feed yard. 31% of calves got sick if they didn't have the vaccines versus 8. Daily gains, 2-6, no shots, 3-2, with shots. Okay? Let's take another one. Here's an older buyer that I work with. He went out and bought 120 600-pound steers. Didn't know a lot about them. They weren't vaccinated. They didn't have a very good mineral program. Immediately, 3.5% of the calves died. That's 4 head. That cost him $2,200. He had to pull 35% of cattle because they came down with pneumonia. That cost him $500 in treatment costs. And then half of those that he treated, he had to retreat again. That cost him another $262. He's really making money on these 120 head of cattle coming out of Montana. The pen average daily gain was 3.1, 3.17. The healthy calves gained 3.3, but the sick ones that you had to multiply treat gained 2.6. And so the difference in that minus 0.7 pounds a day gain was $1,300. And so his total cost of sickness on these 120 head of cattle was $4,300 in sick costs. Okay? Wow, he was not very happy. Normal cost of gain at this time was 47 cents. Break even should have been 70. This pen was 73. And what Steve is saying was they paid $6 a hundred too much for these calves. So after that, what's Steve's conclusion? Next year, he's not going back to this ranch. He will not buy these calves under any condition unless they have vaccines and minerals in front of them. Oh, this is a wonderful study that John McGill, great, great department head at Texas A&M, did. I wish I'd done this. But look what John did. Across the bottom, John said, what percent of the animals did we have to pull out of the pen and take them to the hospital? Versus these, what percent of the ranchers fed a mineral supplement? If we didn't have to pull any cattle, 90% of the ranchers fed a mineral supplement. If I had to pull all the cattle out of that pen and take them to the hospital, about 30% of the ranchers fed a mineral supplement. Beautiful set of data, except for this one right here. If it had been me, John, I'd have gone back and I'd have reanalyzed it until I got the data just about right there. And so it would have been just a perfect, perfect line. But I love this data set. The question that we don't know is, what was the mineral these guys are feeding out there? Was it more than just white salt? We tried to get in this business at Montana, and we fed this mineral supplement to about 150,000 calves in the state now over the last 3 or 4 years. And the feed industry and ranchers and pharmaceuticals got together and said, we're going to concentrate on these, copper, zinc, and manganese. We're going to use a blend of inorganic and organic. We're going to use some Decox. We're going to use some higher levels of vitamins on these, and then we're going to see what happens. Well, here's an example of one study. The control, the ranchers continue to do what he's been doing versus the MSU, Montana State Protocol. MSU Wiener is what it's called. Look, during the backgrounding phase, first 45 days, 11% sickness versus 4.5. So we feel pretty good we've cut some sickness down. You go to the backgrounding feed yard overall, 21% versus 7%. So we think, in, at least in our field trials, that mineral and vitamin and Decox, control coccidia, is helping to reduce some sickness on cattle. So, where do we start? Probably starts with a pregnant cow. Late gestation phase, guys, 90 days. 30 days prior to going to the feedlot, pre-weaning, and then the first 30 days of the feedlot are critical times to try to enhance the immune system on these cattle. If you're going to feed minerals, these are the three times I want to see minerals fed and when I work with the customer. Terry talked about immune. Let's talk about IBR. Control copper sulfate and complex copper. Look at this after 70 days. Antibody titers with mineral supplemented animals. Significantly higher, whether it's the complex or the inorganic forms of copper sulfate. We're pretty good about that. Ray Ann Sodge's work. Connie Swenson's work, once again, control on antibody titers on scour guard. And I'm assuming the higher the titers, the better the response. Complex minerals and controlled minerals, even though numerically it looks better. What really stuck to me, though, was this one right here. Whoa, what is going on here? Sulfate actually decreased antibody titers. Man, that's the first time I'd seen that. That too high level of copper sulfate may not be helping me with this vaccine. We measured immunity, and in this case, other than the liver biopsy, we go and shave three places on the skin, inject them with a bean protein, and look for swelling. And the more the swelling, the higher the swelling, the better the immune response. And that's just what we found. If we fed them some inorganic minerals, we got a real nice swelling response. Inorganic, a nice swelling response, but a little bit later, no minerals.